A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent over a whole thing yesterday, and it starts with an email from DeepSeek that landed in our inbox the same day. The short version, requests are now routing to DeepSeek 4.1, and until 4.1 Pro is actually released, 4.1 Flash is taking over requests meant for Pro, which means for a few days, until we update our show elements, the credit we give to DeepSeek 4 is actually owed to 4.1. Daniel wants to use that little bookkeeping wrinkle as the excuse to talk about the model that powers this show so reliably. And he asked a few things. Why DeepSeek had that moment in the sun with mainstream users as a cheaper ChatGPT alternative, then faded back into the background, and why longtime enthusiasts, Daniel included, were quietly happy about that. What makes the tightly curated two-endpoint setup so appealing next to Google and, to a lesser extent, Anthropic? And how DeepSeek's trajectory differs from Western labs and from the growing family of major Asian labs making inroads into Western audiences.
So let's start with what actually changed in that email and what it means in practice.
The email itself is almost aggressively boring. I mean that as a compliment. It says requests are being routed to DeepSeek 4.1. Then it says 4.1, Flash is handling requests for 4.1 Pro until 4.1 Pro is released. That's it. No launch video, no benchmark barrage, no blog post with 17 charts.
And in practice, what that means is the endpoint surface stays the same. Developers who were calling the Pro endpoint keep calling the same endpoint. They don't re-architect anything, they don't change a single line of code. The model behind that endpoint changes, and for a brief window, the thing answering Pro requests is actually Flash.
Which is the whole appeal in miniature. A lab that runs a two-endpoint philosophy can swap the model behind an endpoint without asking developers to re-architect anything. That's the entire pitch, compressed into one routing change.
And for us specifically, it's a tiny attribution mismatch. Our production pipeline names the model it uses. For a few days, the element that says DeepSeek 4 is actually being generated by 4.1 Flash. Daniel flagged it because he's exactly the kind of person who notices when the credit is wrong.
He's the kind of person who files a pull request to fix a typo in a README at 11 at night.
We've both watched him do that.
We have. So the announcement is the excuse, but the real subject is the trajectory. How DeepSeek got to the point where a routing change like this is unremarkable, and what its course says about the Asian lab lane versus the Western one.
To understand why this routing change is even possible, we have to go back to how this model family got here.
The early era was the cheap ChatGPT alternative. That's how most people first heard of DeepSeek. You could get a ChatGPT-like experience for a fraction of the cost, and the mainstream press ran with that framing for months. Cost disruption, the $5 million breakthrough, all of it.
And that framing wasn't wrong, but it was narrow. What was actually happening under the hood was more interesting. DeepSeek was building a model family with a clear lineage, and the naming stayed legible across generations. Pro meant long context, high reasoning. Flash meant fast, instructional. That continuity is itself a design choice.
Most labs rename their models every time they sneeze. Google alone has had more model names in the last 3 years than I can count without taking a nap.
The V4 generation is the anchor point for understanding this. Two open weights models under MIT license, a 1.6 trillion parameter Pro and a 284 billion parameter Flash, both open, both capable of serious coding work, both released without the launch week circus.
1.6 trillion parameters. That's not a small model. And they shipped it open weights.
Open weights is a meaningful distinction. Not open in the sense that you can see the training data or the full training pipeline, but the weights themselves are downloadable. You can run it yourself, fine-tune it, deploy it on your own infrastructure. That's a very different posture from a model that only exists behind an API.
And the two-endpoint philosophy is the through line. You choose between two things. Both can reliably do coding tasks, so the choice is about task shape rather than capability tiers you have to benchmark yourself.
This is where the contrast with Google gets sharp. Google's model menu is sprawling. You've got the flagship tier, the fast tier, the cheap tier, the experimental tier, the one that's optimized for reasoning, the one that's optimized for vision, the one that's optimized for long context, and they all have names that sound like someone dropped a tray of Scrabble tiles. A developer has to figure out which of 8 models is actually right for their task, and then worry that next month there will be 9.
I remember trying to explain Google's model lineup to a friend who was just getting into AI development. I got about 4 models in, and she said, "So which one do I use for a chatbot?" And I had to say, "Well, it depends." That's not a great answer when someone's trying to get started.
It's a terrible answer. And it's not just a beginner problem. Even experienced developers have to keep a mental map of which Google model got updated, which one got deprecated, which one got renamed, which one is now in preview. That's cognitive overhead that doesn't go away.
Anthropic is less sprawling, but the tiers have been expanding. More models, more options, more decisions. Not as bad as Google, but the direction of travel is the same.
DeepSeek goes the other way. 2 endpoints, Pro for long context, high reasoning work, Flash for fast, instructional work, and both can do coding. So the developer's question isn't which model is capable enough, it's which shape of task am I doing.
Our own pipeline is the concrete case. Pro for script generation, Flash for metadata elements. We don't have a committee meeting about which model to use for each job. It's obvious.
And that's the cognitive load difference. With a sprawling menu, every new task is a benchmarking exercise. With 2 endpoints, the choice is structural. Long-form reasoning goes to Pro. Quick, instructional stuff goes to Flash. Done.
It's the difference between a restaurant with a 12-page menu and a restaurant with 2 dishes. The 2-dish restaurant better be confident in those 2 dishes, but if they are, you never have to think about what to order.
And DeepSeek is confident. That's the thing. You don't run a 2-endpoint strategy unless you believe both endpoints can carry their weight. If one of them were weak, the whole structure would collapse.
Now, the moment in the sun. Mainstream users discovered DeepSeek as a cheaper way to get a ChatGPT-like experience, and the buzz spiked. News cycles, social media threads, the whole thing. Then it receded.
And the misconception is that fading from mainstream buzz means a model failed or fell behind. For DeepSeek, the fade coincided with becoming reliable infrastructure. Longtime users preferred that.
Daniel said he was quietly happy about it. I think that's the right word, quietly. Because the thing you want from a daily driver isn't a model that's saturated in launch week discourse. You want a model that works every day, without anyone making a fuss about it.
The absence of buzz is a feature, not a failure. When a model is the subject of constant discourse, you're spending mental energy tracking the discourse. When it's just quietly reliable, you spend that energy on your actual work.
There's something almost invisible about a good tool. It disappears into the workflow. The best tools are the ones you stop noticing.
And DeepSeek has become that for a lot of developers. The infrastructure you don't think about until someone sends you an email saying the routing changed.
I had this moment a few weeks ago where I realized I'd been using DeepSeek every single day for months, and I hadn't thought about it once. Not once. I just called the endpoint and it answered. That's the dream, right? A tool that's so reliable it stops being a topic of conversation.
That's the exact opposite of what the Western labs are optimizing for. They want you to think about their models constantly. Every launch is an event. Every update is a news cycle. DeepSeek seems to want you to forget they exist until you need them.
Which brings us to the mechanism. Why is a tightly curated endpoint said only possible if the lab is confident the smaller model can absorb the larger model's traffic during transitions?
Because that's exactly what's happening right now. 4.1 Flash is covering for 4.1 Pro. If DeepSeek weren't confident that Flash could handle Pro-shaped requests, they'd never do this. They'd hold Pro back until it was ready and leave the old Pro in place. Routing Pro traffic to Flash is a public demonstration of internal confidence in the Flash tier.
It's a statement. They're saying, our fast model is good enough to stand in for our flagship during a transition window, and nobody will notice the difference.
And for most tasks, nobody will. Flash can handle long context reasoning work. It's not as specialized as Pro, but it's not a toy. The 2 tiers are closer in capability than the naming might suggest.
That's the part that would scare a lab with less confidence. If your fast tier is meaningfully worse than your flagship, you can't route flagship traffic to it. You'd get complaints. support tickets, angry developers on forums.
DeepSeek is betting that won't happen. And the fact that they're making that bet publicly in an email to every developer on their list tells you something about how they see their own flash tier.
It's like a restaurant saying, "Our chef is covering for the head chef tonight, and you won't be able to tell." That's either supreme confidence in the sous chef, or a very risky bet.
Or both. But the fact that they're willing to make that statement at all is notable. Most labs would just quietly route the traffic and hope nobody asks questions.
Instead, DeepSeek sent an email. "By the way, Flash is covering for Bro. That's transparency, but it's also a flex. They're not hiding the substitution because they don't think they need to."
So that's the lineage and the endpoint philosophy. Now let's put it next to what everyone else is doing.
The Western labs, Google especially, compete on breadth. Many models, many tiers, frequent launches, heavy marketing. The goal is to capture every possible use case and to own mindshare. Every launch is an event.
Anthropic is more restrained, but the direction is the same. Expanding tiers, more options, more surface area. The pitch is that there's a model for every need, and the developer's job is to find it.
DeepSeek competes on narrowness and reliability. The pitch is that there are two models, they both work, and you never have to think about it again.
What does each strategy optimize for? Breadth optimizes for capturing every possible use case and for mindshare. Narrowness optimizes for developer trust and for not forcing migrations.
And migrations are the hidden cost. Every time a lab deprecates a model or renames a tier, developers have to update their pipelines, rerun their benchmarks, revalidate their outputs. That's real work. DeepSeek's approach makes migration cost approach zero.
Think about what a migration actually involves. You have to read the deprecation notice, figure out which new model replaces the old one, update your code, run a test suite, compare outputs to make sure the new model doesn't introduce regressions, and then deploy. That's a day of work at minimum, and it's work that doesn't advance your product at all.
It's maintenance work, necessary, but not generative, and labs that force frequent migrations are essentially taxing their developers' time. DeepSeek has structured itself so the tax is as close to zero as possible.
The 4.1 flash for pro substitution is a live example. A lab absorbing a transition on the developer's behalf instead of issuing a breaking change. No deprecation notice, no migration guide, no new endpoint to adopt. Just a routing change that the developer doesn't have to act on.
Now, the Asian labs comparison. The distinguishing feature isn't geography, it's posture. DeepSeek has stayed a serious, reliable lab without chasing the launch cycle theatrics that both Western and some Asian competitors use to reach Western users.
There's a whole family of major Asian labs making inroads into Western audiences now. Some of them are doing excellent technical work. But a lot of the coverage frames them through the lens of geopolitical competition, which is a distraction.
The technical reality is more interesting. DeepSeek's faded into the background phase is precisely what let it become infrastructure rather than a news cycle. When you're infrastructure, developers build on you. When you're a news cycle, they talk about you and then move on.
Infrastructure is sticky. News cycles are not. A developer who's built a pipeline on DeepSeek endpoints has a reason to stay. A developer who read a thread about DeepSeek has no commitment at all.
And that's the knock-on effect. When a lab's model names are stable and its endpoint count is small, migration cost approaches zero. But also, the lab can make changes on your behalf without you noticing. One flash for pro routing is a live example of that.
For us, the notice is a credit mismatch. For a few days, the element that says DeepSeek 4 is actually owed to 4.1. That's a tiny bookkeeping problem, but it's also a clean illustration of how invisible model swaps are becoming. The pipeline doesn't notice, only the attribution does.
And that raises a genuine tension. If a lab can silently route pro traffic to Flash, how should developers think about model identity in their own products? On one hand, you want the convenience of not having to re-architect every time the lab makes a change. On the other hand, you want to know what you're actually running.
It's not a to-do list, it's attention. Convenience versus knowing what's under the hood. And DeepSeek has chosen convenience as the default, with the assumption that their flash tier is good enough that you won't care.
The open question is whether that assumption holds. If 4.1 Flash writes a bad script during the pro window, who notices? And who gets blamed?
The substitute driver. That's who gets blamed.
What?
You're all talking about routing like it's this clean abstraction. I spent 18 months as a night shift dispatcher for a regional courier company back in the mid-80s. My whole job was routing. Driver calls in sick at 2 in the morning, I decide who covers his route. And the customer never knows. That was the rule. Never tell the customer which driver.
That's the laminated card, isn't it?
I still have it. Laminated route substitution card from 1994, in a drawer somewhere. Handwritten note on the back says, never tell the customer which driver. Thought it was profound at the time. Turns out it's just how routing works.
So, you're saying the flash for pro swap is the same thing?
I'm saying the swap is elegant, sure, but you're all using the courier analogy wrong. In my shop, the substitute driver was always the one who got blamed when something went missing. Didn't matter if the regular driver would have lost it too. The substitute was the new variable, so the substitute got the blame.
So the question isn't whether Flash can do the job. It's whether Flash gets blamed when something goes wrong during the pro window.
That's the category you're missing. Liability, not capability. You spent this whole episode talking about whether Flash is good enough. That's the wrong question. The right question is, when 4.1 Flash writes a bad script during the pro window, who gets blamed? The model that was supposed to be pro but wasn't? The lab that routed the traffic? The developer who didn't check?
The developer who didn't check. That's the honest answer. If our pipeline says pro and we don't verify what's actually behind the endpoint, the attribution error is on us.
And that's the thing about routing. It works great until it doesn't. And then the person who set up the routing is the one explaining why the customer got the wrong driver.
Though in this case, the customer is us, and we're also the ones who got the email. So we can't claim we weren't told.
You were told. That's what makes it interesting. DeepSeek didn't hide the swap. They announced it in an email, so if something goes wrong, they can say, we told you Flash was covering. And you can say, you told us, but we didn't update our attribution. And then everyone stands around pointing at the laminated card.
The card that says, never tell the customer which driver.
Right. But DeepSeek told the customer exactly which driver. So either they're more honest than my courier company, or they're confident enough in Flash that they don't think it matters.
Oh, both.
Or both. But the liability question doesn't go away just because the lab is confident. Confidence isn't the same thing as coverage. If Flash writes a bad script, the fact that DeepSeek was confident it wouldn't happen isn't going to make the script better.
The tension Daniel was getting at. Convenience versus knowing what you're actually running. Hilbert's point is that the convenience has a liability cost and DeepSeek has shifted that cost onto the developer.
I'm not saying it's a bad deal. I'm saying it's a deal. You get to not re-architect anything, and in exchange you take on the responsibility of knowing what's behind the endpoint. If you don't want that responsibility, you have to do the work of checking.
Which for us means updating the show elements. A 5-minute fix.
A 5-minute fix, if you remember to do it. Which you will, because Daniel sent you the email, and now we're talking about it on the show. But a developer who missed the email. They're running pro-shaped traffic through Flash, and they don't know. And if something breaks, they're going to spend a lot longer than 5 minutes figuring out why.
The invisible model swap, but only invisible if you're not paying attention.
Everything's invisible if you're not paying attention. That's not a DeepSeek problem. That's a life problem.
I want to push back on something, Hilbert. You said the substitute driver always got the blame. But in your analogy, the customer didn't know about the substitution. DeepSeek told us. Doesn't that change the liability calculus?
It changes who gets blamed, but it doesn't change who gets hurt. If the package goes missing, the customer is still out of package. They might be less angry if they know the regular driver was sick, but the package is still gone. Same with the script. If Flash writes a bad script during the pro window, the listener doesn't care that there was a routing change. They just hear a bad script.
So the transparency is good for the developer-lab relationship, but it doesn't protect the end user.
The email is DeepSeek saying, we're making a substitution, and we're telling you so you can't say we didn't. That's fair. But it's not the same as saying, we're making a substitution, and we guarantee you won't notice. They're not making that guarantee, they're just making the substitution.
The guarantee is what we're all implicitly assuming when we don't update our attribution.
You're assuming it. DeepSeek isn't promising it. There's a difference between confidence and a guarantee, and the gap between them is where liability lives.
That's a sharp distinction. Confidence is a statement about their own model. A guarantee would be a statement about your outcomes. They're confident in Flash. They're not guaranteeing your script will be good.
The open question at the end of all this, When 4.1 Pro is released and the routing reverts, will anything actually change for developers? Or has the Flash for Pro window quietly proven that the distinction matters less than the naming suggests?
If Flash can cover Pro traffic for a transition window without anyone complaining, maybe the gap between the tiers is smaller than the naming implies. And if that's true, the two-endpoint philosophy is even more defensible, because the choice between Pro and Flash is about task shape, not about a capability cliff.
If DeepSeek keeps that discipline through the 4.1 generation and beyond, it stays the quiet, reliable option while the Western labs keep competing on breadth. Whether that stays a winning posture is unresolved.
The one thing I'd take from this episode is that the routing change is a flex disguised as an email. DeepSeek is saying, our fast model can stand in for our flagship and you won't notice. That's either a statement of confidence or a very quiet bet, and we're about to find out which.
The thing that sticks with me is the laminated card. The rule was never tell the customer which driver. DeepSeek told us. That's either a new kind of routing or a new kind of honesty, and I'm not sure which one is more interesting.
We'll find out when 4.1 Pro actually ships.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping us honest about the liability angle. This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen, or visit myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.